You welcome back to the third and final hour of the 9 till noon show. Going over to Michael and Fionnuala very shortly, just a few bits of housekeeping before we do. Again, just to mention that we'll be getting regular rally updates from Oisín and Chris Ashmore. They'll be out and about for the course of the rally. Six stages today. The first stage 1 to 6 in the Nishowen, Malinhead, Coolcross and Mamore Gap. Tomorrow there are 8 stages. That's stages 7 to 14. They're in Knockalla, Gary Gort, Hyde Len and Lochkeel. And on Sunday, stages 15 to 20, 6 stages again at Garton, Atlantic Drive and Fannett. And we'll be getting this first stage report, I suspect, from Oisín over the course of the next hour. Caller says, I had a bus booked to go to the Take That concert in Malahide in Dublin this evening. The bus has been cancelled this morning. Does anyone know of a bus going, or is anyone going who would share a lift with a mum and her daughter? If you can help, I'm going to give you a number to call. That number is 086-340-9127. 086-340-9127. If you're heading to that Take That concert in Malahide in Dublin this evening and you can help out a couple who've been let down by their bus plans, as it were. Their bus has been cancelled, so if you can offer a lift or give some help to a woman or daughter, it's 086-340-9127. It's the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio. It's just past 11 on a Friday morning, and you know what that means. It's the entertainment slot on the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio. Delighted to say that we have Fionnuala and Michael in studio. Great to see you both.
Great to be here.
Good to be
Absolutely.
Here.
I think given the sad news that came through yesterday, there's only one place to start, and that is Donald Sutherland, a legend, and he's gone.
Yeah, absolutely. I saw one comment about the fact that, and somebody on Twitter, somebody who tweets about him a lot, and the point being that you have great actors, and there's a craft, undeniably, and there's ways that somebody can, you know, master the craft and become great. But then there's that X factor, that charisma that some actors have, and the person who tweets about him a lot and who made this observation would be a fan of his TV work. He did a lot of stuff on BBC, on English TV and stuff like that. A lot of these shows, like, I think Danger Man, Avengers, those kind of shows, he popped up on all those. And the point he's making is that there's that X factor that you can't teach. That there is that charisma thing, that magic that happens when someone is in the lens. And, Donald Sutherland was one of those people with...
He could do anything. He could do comedy roles, drama roles, serious roles. You see him once, he's in the film M.A.S.H., and he was a powerful... And a lot of people just think of the TV series, but that came from a film that Donald Sutherland was in, and he was amazing in that. I mean, if you wanted smouldering, sexy romanticism, no one better than Sutherland.
Yep.
If you wanted a mad tank-driving hero in a World War II film, no one better than Sutherland.
And sci-fi, if you want a conspiracy, like the body, you know, he's the man to convince you of all that as well, you know?
Oh, absolutely.
I think what's amazing about it was how many smaller roles he was in. You know, when you think Donald Sutherland, you think of him as being like this huge star. But he actually, when you go through his back, you know, his catalogue, him actually being the leading man or the starring role.
Yeah.
And like, but you don't think of him as being the secondary, you know what I mean? A character actor, which technically, when you look at it, is what he is.
That's absolutely a good point.
Because he was so good and he stood out in everything. I mean, I always just think about like when he was in Backdraft, you know, like he had this like tiny thing. He was in a couple of scenes. Again, in JFK, I think it was in like one scene in JFK. He nearly stole
it. But he owned it.
He's a high profile character. Actor, he's one of those character actors, who couldn't handle the lead role, but as you say quite correctly, he often wasn't the lead. But then you were thinking, oh, wasn't Sutherland great in that? Even though he had once,
I know, and you because I was like going to make up a list, and I said, oh, we'll make up a list of all the movies now that he starred in that I've seen him because I've seen him in so many stuff. Yeah. And then when you go into it, you're like, oh my god, he was like fourth down,
in the list.
And yet when I think of the film,
he's who you think of.
I think of him in like the top two or three,
and that is the mark of a great actor
in anything that he was in. He just was an amazing actor. And like, just stood out. I think it was just with his his features and with everything. Mm-hmm. It's hard to believe he never won, was never even nominated for an Oscar, only received one, an honorary one, but never actually was nominated for any of his work, which is amazing.
I suspect he wouldn't have lost too much sleep over that. I always got the feeling with Donald Sutherland, he was one of those, and this is not a pejorative term, he was a jobbing actor.
Yes.
And he took every role, whether he was playing a lead role in Kelly's Heroes or whether he was the mad professor in the video for Kate Bush's Cloud Busting, which is the first thing. To be honest, that was the first thing I thought of when I think Donald Sutherland. It's the first thing I think of is Kate Bush's Cloud Busting video. He's brilliant in it. Whatever he's in, I suspect he would have given everything he did exactly the same.
Yes.
Exactly the same effort, and he threw himself into it. There was never any of this, oh, it's only a small role, I'll go in and dial it in. The phrase dial it in was never in Donald Sutherland's vocabulary.
Oh, I would think so, based on anything you ever seen him in. Yeah. And then just the joy of joys he gave us Kiefer.
As an added
gift to the world. He hadn't done enough for himself, did he?
And it was always clear Kiefer didn't lick it off the road. I mean, you know,
that was always perfectly clear.
Unbelievable, yeah. I know, it is. It'll be a big loss to that kind of a old style, just hard working, as you say, jobbing, just slogging his way through it, you know, high quality actor.
And the great thing is, we could see 10, 15 TV and movie channels over the course of the next 2 days showing something to pay tribute to Donald Sutherland. I swear every one of them will probably pick something different
unlike others when they pass and it's like this one defining role. In fairness, there is just so much that you could do, that you could show with him. He just wasn't amazing. And people should look up his catalogue. I think that's the thing to do now. You know, if you're unaware of him and you don't really know, you have a treat in store.
Well, there'll be younger people will know him from the Hunger Games films and may not be aware, like, that this guy was doing things was doing things like Kelly's. When you mentioned that gets mentioned to me sometimes for guys that would like. So I may watch that myself, actually, over the next 7 days.
And he did the one with Kiefer as well. He did he did a cowboy movie with Kiefer. It was the only time they ever worked together.
Was it Tombstone? Was it one of those? Not Tombstone. It was one of those.
Type of an idea, set in that sort of a Wild West kind of an idea of it. But it was very good now, because obviously they worked very well together. It was their first time that they'd ever worked together on it. Mm. But definitely, I think people should stick his name into whatever channels you have or whatever platforms you have and just treat yourself by watching Donald in any one of his many roles.
Mm. It's funny, you mentioned Kelly's Heroes, Michael. I often think of, if you take Brad Pitt in Fury, that character, maybe not a million miles away from Donald Sutherland's in Kelly's Heroes, that same sort of slightly madcap tank commander. Now, I mean, Pitt took it down a different sort of road, but I always wondered, would Pitt have taken some inspiration? Okay, Donald Sutherland, may he rest in peace. God knows he gave us a lot. Cinema, Fionnuala, you've picked Inside Out 2, and we often say when it comes to animated films that you get animated films that are predominantly aimed at kids, but there's a lot in there for adults as well. And I would say, arguably, the best example of that ever was the first Inside Out film. I mean, great film on every level.
Oh, it was such a good film and such a great, on so many levels, because yes, you could just, as you do with a lot of animated films, just end up having to bring the kids and then finding it funny yourself as an adult with some of the adult content. But actually what came out of it as well was, it's used now, as far as I'm aware, as kind of like a teaching tool for young kids, you know, that they can watch it and chat about it. And, you know, anybody who's seen the first one is basically about joy. She's one of the emotions. It reminds me, I think, of like we were talking about before, Michael and I. It's like if anybody ever saw the Numbskulls cartoon or anything like that.
Indeed.
These are the people these are the emotions that live inside your body. And they do, they're kind of at the steering wheel of
the
how
control,
you feel
yeah.
and you go control.
And another reference that might ring a bell with people, there was a long-running Fox sitcom in the 90s called Herman's Head, which used to air on Channel 4 late on Saturday nights. And that was the same basic idea, the four emotions that controlled Herman. And we were privy to their... Yeah.
Well, in the first one, it was really all about joy, and joy had wanted to take over and didn't want to let anything else in, just wanted joy to get in. And to be honest, for me, I actually thought it was a great one for parents to watch, because sometimes parents feel like that their kids can't express... experience any, you know, upset or sadness or, that, you know, they take it very much to heart when it is a part of life. And that's one of the things that the movie kind of talked about and talked to kids through. This one falls a little bit short of the first one. I think because it's a little bit more complex. Basically what it is Riley, the little girl that was in the first one, is now heading into her teenage years. So obviously her thoughts and issues and everything have become slightly different. And it involves then the arrival of these new emotions.
Yes.
And the new emotions are anxiety, ennui, love it, embarrassment. Yeah. And envy. These are all the new emotions that have joined into the thing. And once again, we see one emotion that wants to take over the whole lot. And, you know, the movie's kind of based on the journey of the realization of that you can't let one thing take control. Yeah. In this, I think it could be a really important movie. And I do think people should sit down and watch it and then talk to your kids about it. You know, it's not quite as good as the first one, but it's still a good talking tool, because in it, basically what happens is that anxiety comes into the mix. As we all know, starts coming in when you're around 11 and 12 and you start noticing what your friends are doing or have or don't have. I would, as anybody knows, with next week being Taylor Swift, if I have one more mother friend of mine ringing me going, everybody's going except their teenager. And it's all, you know, a tragedy to their lives that they're not going to see her. And so, but this in this, it says the anxiety tries to take over and through that pushes away all of the kind of more, shall we say, the basic emotions that were there, you know, joy, sadness, fear, and anger, and that pushes them all away and then just and tries to take over. And obviously that goes down a bad path, because as we all know, anxiety is one of those things that you can't just let it take over your life. You have to allow other emotions in as well. And this really is that kind of an idea of it. It's that, you know, anxiety is part of it. It's part of everybody's life. It comes into you. And I do think in that sense, it could be a good movie for people to sit and watch it with your kids and then chat to them about it. I went with eight of my nieces and nephews. I rounded them all up to bring them. So I had a range of, that's only half of them.
Yeah.
I had a range of them from 13. Oh, she'd kill me. From 13 down as far as 5.
Yeah.
And, four. And they absolutely loved it now. All of them got something different out of it. Some of the kind of middle 7 or 8 year olds found it a little bit more difficult to get into it, because they didn't have a full understanding. But the top and the bottom then absolutely adored it. And it does open up, as I said, that kind of a conversation about how you're feeling. How, you know, you can allow things to kind of get on top of you, but you have to sort of take a break. Like, I loved in the end of it, after all the drama and everything, all of a sudden anxiety comes forward again, and they put anxiety sitting down in a recliner with a cup of tea and say, no, you're grand. You're there. It's fine. You know, and I just think it's a really good movie in that sense.
It's an interesting one in that the other thing, of course, that's happening to people as they enter their early teens, and I suppose really you can't address this directly in a film that's geared towards younger kids, is puberty. Do they do anything to nod in the direction of puberty, or do we just leave that to one side? Because that would just complicate
things. Well, no, this is what they've done is, what happens is they wake up one morning and there's an alarm going on the console. And it is puberty.
Oh, it is puberty. Oh, and they actually directly address it.
Yeah, they just say this is puberty. And what happens then is that Riley is moving into as with the American system, is moving into secondary school, you know, moving into a high school. Her friends aren't coming with her. Is she going to have new friends? Does she need to forget about the past and only think about the future and drop everything and change herself? Yeah. Does she need to change who she is so that she keeps, you know, the anxiety then starts to think, you know, well, if we don't do this, then this will happen. And then all of a sudden we'll have no friends and we'll be sitting alone. And if we don't do that, then this will happen. And then that'll happen. And then that'll happen. And it kind of, you know, gets into a big spiral with it.
I remember that.
Yeah.
I remember that.
Like this, that's what I like about the movies. I think, you know, you can talk about whether or not it's as good as the first one. You know, obviously the first time you see something like that, to be honest, the first time we saw Inside Out, it also was a new kind of animation that Pixar were doing. You know, the way it was, everything about it was the colors, it was the idea of it, it was that kind of an animation. This is slightly different. Because, you know, she's maturing through, but I still think there's a lot of value in this. And I do think You know, it's, I mean, it's frightening how much you hear kids talking about anxiety.
Yeah.
And obviously it's good that they're talking about their emotions, but just, we didn't even know it was a thing back in our day, you know?
We still experienced it though.
Yeah, we didn't.
Oh, we did.
I remember experiencing it.
Yeah.
Now I know what it was called.
Yes,
yeah, exactly.
I think
now that they put a word in it, we need to be able to talk about it. And things like this movie give parents an opening.
It could be a very good tool to allow that to happen.
You know, if you're sitting down with like anyone between like the ages of kind of like 8 and 12, you know what I mean? That's the kind of time that all this sort of stuff starts coming in. Mm. You start suddenly caring about the friends, caring about how you look or what you're wearing or what's the, you know what I mean? That you're fitting in and all that kind of stuff.
Yep.
I just think it could be a great tool.
Looking at
it's quite funny.
Oh yeah. Looking at the global box office, I just happened to be looking, not for this, but I was looking for other reasons this morning. And for a new film, it really has connected because it's already globally number 4 at the box office.
Excellent. Yeah.
So, I mean, it's over, you know, up beside films that have been out much, much longer because it is only out a couple of weeks, isn't it? Yeah.
Oh, no, it's only out since last week.
Last week. Well, that's amazing. That's globally, globally.
It came out last Friday.
So it's going to rise. It's going to go up even higher than number 4.
Yeah, I think people need to go into it with, you know, taking the message from it rather than thinking, oh, this is going to be just like the last one.
Hmm. Okay. Let's move on to something completely different. Jack Ryan.
Oh, Jack Ryan.
Originally a Tom Clancy creation,
yes.
And has now developed, started off in Clear and Present Danger and such like.
Yes,
and
that's right.
And so many films at this
stage. Yeah, there was Harrison Ford, Alec Baldwin, and Chris Pine did a role of it. Yeah, that's right. And then they had a spin-off with Michael B. Jordan, which I didn't realise, I didn't really know about. But yeah, a TV series started in 2018 on Amazon with John Krasinski. Mm-hmm. And it came to conclusion last year. I'm just catching up with that last season now, the fourth season. And one of the reasons I put it off, I was saying this to Greg last week, and I think I know it's put him off season 3. Season 3 wasn't as good for me and didn't have as good a reception from the fans. So I went into season 4 this week with just a wee bit of trepidation because I love the show, but I didn't love season 3, and I was hoping season 4 would be the ship righting itself and getting back on course. Halfway through the season, I have to say it feels a lot like the show has righted itself for the final season. And although it is the final season, and I'm not sure exactly why the pin was pulled on it, whether it was Amazon or John Krasinski, because he was obviously wants to become a director and he's been directing stuff. But I now realise there's a spin-off coming out of this season, and one of the major characters who is absolutely brilliant in this is getting a spin-off. So the franchise will continue, but without John Krasinski as Jack Ryan. So basically for the fourth season, for anyone who hasn't seen it, very brief overview of the plot. Again, he's an analyst at the CIA, and that's kind of the driving force of all these stories, that he's kind of not an action hero, but strangely
always gets drags
into these things.
And that's why I'm wondering, how can you pull so many films and so many books and 4 series out of this? Because my understanding of Jack Ryan, having read the books, is exactly that. He's an analyst. Yeah. He's a books guy. He's an ideas guy. He's there to advise the president and the CIA about what's likely to happen in China because he's just read 5 documents in the original Mandarin.
Yes!
And then suddenly, he's going around the world stopping nuclear bombs, bringing down the
jumping out of helicopters into the ocean.
But I mean, you know, you can only do that. Surely you can only sustain that trope for so long.
Well, one of the reasons I think it works well in the TV show is I think John Krasinski, he's not your typical action man, kind of leading man. He does look a bit bookish. So even though we have seen him take on multiple terrorists successfully in previous seasons, I'm still willing to suspend disbelief a little bit and think, oh, maybe this guy can't do it this time.
And they don't go over the top with his heroics.
Yeah. No, they don't.
You know, like if you remember, I always remember the first time watching this back in the day and Harrison Ford played it. And I was like going, I know, the books, you know what I mean? Yeah. And they just like threw the book out and they suddenly put Indiana Jones as, you know what I mean, as Jack Ryan. Whereas I think Krasinski is a bit more convincing if you're a fan of the books because, like I say, he's that bookish look. And yes, he does obviously do a bit of fighting.
Yes.
But it's not like, you know, it's not Tom Cruise fighting. You know
what I mean? No, it's not. Like, well, the best
he's not hanging off buildings.
It's not Jack Bauer. It's not even like Jack Reacher. It's not that kind of character. I'm halfway through the season and he hasn't punched anybody or shot anybody yet. Yeah. All he's done so far in the season is he's working in the CIA. He's discovered a black op off the book thing called Pluto. He's not quite sure what it is. There's been a high-profile assassination in Nigeria. Mm-hmm. The Prime Minister has been assassinated. And inside the CIA, he and other people are worried that it might be their responsibility because they're not too sure where the trail leads. So he basically, in episode one, he cuts off the funding for this thing called Pluto. And we see around the world, there's a domino effect.
Yeah.
In Mexico, there's a drug cartel that this affects. And embedded in that cartel is Michael Pena from the Ant-Man films. Is probably the best touchstone for that guy. He was a comedic sidekick in those. But in this, he's an action hero, great action hero in this great character. And we also go to the far side to like Myanmar. And there's an international criminal organization that's also tied in. So the story takes place on these three locations, Washington, D.C., Mexico, and far side, Burma, that side of the world. But it's all tied into this black op operation. And having pulled the pin on it, pulled the plug on it, everything just hits the fan. And there's a lot of people getting killed in different parts of the world. And by the end of where I've watched halfway through the season, Jack has left Washington. And he's about to head over to the Far East to figure out what the heck is going on.
And then suddenly he gets a call saying Pluto has evolved into Blackbriar, and then Matt Damon pops up and, oh my God, it's Jason Bourne, and the whole thing goes to pot. Okay, it's 25 past 11. We're going to take a quick break back after these. It's the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio. We'll be going back to Michael and to Fionnuala very shortly. But before we do, I want to go over to Zoom because there's a very interesting concert taking place in Moville tonight, and we're joined by Dennis McGuinness, the chair, and Michael Kavanagh, the vice chair of the Moville Men's Shed. Michael and Dennis, a very good morning to you both.
Good morning, Donald.
Thank you very much indeed for joining us. This is an interesting one because the actual concert is taking place in the Men's Shed itself.
Correct. We do have concerts different periods during the year, and it's concerts, and we have Thursday night singing from 8 o'clock till 11. Where everyone is welcome, and you pay a €3 donation. The concerts are €10, and that's what pays for our fuel, our heating and lighting and everything during the year.
Music, storytelling, all taking place in the Med Shed, and it's a very nice way for local talent to come through, because I'm sure you're not bringing in big names from outside. This is very much going to be coming within the community of Moville itself.
It's community members, but we've also had Shuni Cramsey, Patsy Kavanagh could be in concerts by the Henry Girls as well. We had QP Doherty and Maria. So
Chris Logan and Les Thompson on the Kavanagh Ross.
And if
those of us that are taking part in the concert, I don't think that you can see, we're not teenagers anymore, but we enjoy singing and we enjoy getting together. And on the Thursday night, we have the singing from 8 o'clock until 11 with tea break in between and cones and cakes, etc. So,
well, I always say, as long as you're breathing, you're never too old to be doing a bit of singing, doing a bit of acting and having a bit of crack. And the day people say when you're old you shouldn't be doing that, well, that's the day that we have to rethink our priorities. It gets a good crowd every time, I'm sure it does.
Oh, it does. It's been well supported.
It holds about 100 people in total, and we usually fill it. This is the first time we attempted storytelling with the music, which usually always... Mm-hmm. And this is also the first time we attempted all the music by our own shedders.
Well, and that's a really good way of doing it as well. I mean, does it operate, as they would say, on the basis of an open mic where anyone that wants to express an interest and come and do something is welcome to do so and just get in touch and away you go?
Yeah, if there's anybody in the audience that we know sings a song, they'll be called up and given the chance to sing a song. And, it's open for everybody, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Now, I have been at some gigs like that, and they've gone on half the night and into the early hours of the morning, because suddenly you find no one wants to sing, no one wants to sing, no one wants to sing, and then suddenly everyone wants to sing. Now, it may well be that the reason that causes that in licensed premises may not necessarily pertain in a men's shed.
Yeah, you're right there. That starts at 8 o'clock sharp. And it finishes at 10 past 11, no later. Usually go for 11 o'clock, but if it's a really good night, you have an encore, maybe go for 10 minutes longer.
Well, I love the specificity of 10 minutes past 11. That's when it finishes. Guaranteed to be a great night, I am sure. It's taking place tonight. Music, storytelling, all taking place in the Men's Shed in Moville. Dennis McGuinness, the chair, and Michael Kavanagh, the vice chair, thank you both very much indeed for joining us on the programme this morning. Thank you, if you're around about Moville. So still a few tickets left for tonight?
Yeah,
Yeah, a few, not many, but maybe 10.
So if someone wants to go there, they better get in touch and get in touch fairly quick.
Get in touch or pay the door. Yeah.
Excellent. Okay, okay. Gentlemen, thank you very much indeed. That's concert taking place, as we said, in the men's shed in Moville tonight. Now, shall we go back to our panel, and if I can actually get the right mouse to work. Oh, yeah. Oh, what a pro. Amazing. Absolutely. Oh, they should give me a job in the media. They
really now that you've mastered the mouse, there's no stopping you.
Absolutely. I mean, a lot of comments coming in about Donald Sutherland. And, you know, in the World War II movie The Eagle Has Landed, he played an IRA man helping Michael Caine, playing a German soldier trying to assassinate Churchill. Remember it well. Donald Sutherland in Don't Look Now, directed by Nicholas Roeg, 73, co-starring Julie Christie, that's a hell of a film.
That's actually been, that's actually been on my, that's been at the top of the queue actually for a while to watch. Yeah. I may pull the trigger on that this weekend.
I have watched Don't, it is, I mean, and I spoke earlier now. About it, oh yeah, but that's the one, you want smouldering sexuality, I mean, you know, he smoulders you're going to catch fire on
yes.
It's really, really good in that respect. Fionnuala, I want to go back to yourself. Yes. You have given me a list of stuff, most of which we're not going to get to, let's be honest.
No, just leave stuff
out. On Disney, this is interesting. Sins of the Parents, the Crumbly Trials.
Yes, this is a new documentary that's actually only just out on Disney. So I haven't even managed to get to the end of it yet, even though it's only an hour long. But I am interested in it because I don't know if you ever read the book, Donal. We Need to Talk About Kevin.
Yes.
So We Need to Talk About Kevin was a book by Lionel Shriver. It was many, many years ago. A friend of mine read it and called me and said, oh, my God, I'm dropping around this book. I need you to read it instantly because we must have a conversation about it. And so I read it. It was just an unbelievably gripping read. And basically of the story is whether or not nature versus nurture. And in the story, you have just a whole thing about a woman who's raising her child. And then I don't want to spoil it for anybody that might take out and read it. But it just was an amazing book. They made a film of it afterwards, which I don't think the film was quite as good. It didn't really have that kind of critical acclaim. Mm. But to be honest, I didn't watch it because I loved the book so much. I was afraid to watch the movie. Sadly, this is similar kind of a circumstances. Some people may be aware of it because the court case just finished up.
I'm really sorry. I'm going to have to cut across you because, as you know, it's rally weekend.
All right.
And we are going now to our first stage report. So it's taking place right across the county. You can follow the rally on Highland Radio, on air, online, and at highlandradio.com. And in just a moment, we're going to be going over to Machine.
Yeah, thanks, Donal. I'm just looking out the one screen of our Highland car at the end of the opening stage of the Walton Recycling Donegal International Rally, and we're getting spits of rain, but according to the drivers and reports coming from in the stage, it is bone dry, which is certainly suiting this R2 machinery. And the fastest man in there in Malinhead to start the day in dry conditions, Matt Edwards and David Moynihan in the Ford Fiesta, by just 0.7 of a second from Keith Cronin and Mikey Galvin. That is your top two after the opening stage. Cahill McCourt, also in a Fiesta, had a brilliant time, just 2.1 seconds adrift off Cronin, and 2.8 adrift of Edwards. By the way, Edwards' time, 7 minutes, 35.8 seconds over the 14.8 kilometres here in North Inishowen. Sitting in fourth position overall is the All Donegal crew of David Kelly and Dino Sullivan in the Volkswagen Polo. They are sitting currently just shy of 3 seconds off the pace. A good opening run there by David Kelly. The defending champions, Callum Devine and Noel O'Sullivan, well, they are in a new car. It's the first run in Ireland of the Skoda Fabia RS. Fifth quickest time, 7 minutes 40.8 for the defending champions, 5 seconds slower than the fastest man, Matt Edwards. The rest of the top 10 after stage one at this stage of the day. Still lots of cars coming through here. The winner from 2 years ago, Josh Moffat and Andy Hayes in the Citroën, a sixth overall, some 10 seconds down off the pace of Edwards. Marin Evans and Jared Conway, who were late out of Parc Fermé this morning and are conserving their tyres for the next stage in Mamora Gap. They were seventh overall, some 10.9 seconds adrift. The first of the modified cars inside the top 10 already. Kevin Gallagher and Ryan Moore in the Darien leading class 14, leading the two-wheel drive category, and just 18 seconds adrift of the fastest man, but the modifieds already into the top 10 and mixing it with the R2 cars. Michael Boyle and Dermot Boyle are, Dermot McCafferty, excuse me, the Volkswagen are ninth, and in the top 10 is being wrapped up by Michael's father and former winner Declan Boyle, with Patrick Walsh on board in the Citroen. So that is the top 10 at the end of stage 1. Just looking through some of the rest of them. Aidan Ray's 11th, Gary McPhillips 12th, Gary Jennings and Rory Kennedy, the former winners, are 13th. James Ford and a Citroen is 14th, and Jason Mitchell and Paddy McCrudden, they are wrapping up the top 15. But the cars are now heading up to Mamore Gap. The stages here in Inishowen returning to the International Rally for the first time in 11 years, and already there's been a fascinating start to this event. Desi Henry, however, has not had so much luck in Malinhead. He's lost over 3 minutes, and that was due to a puncture in Malinhead. So the leaders at front, Matt Edwards leads from Keith Cronin, followed by Cathal McCourt, and the advantage of Edwards over Cronin as they go to stage two is just 0.7 of a second. Chris Ashmore's at the end of Mamore Gap, and we'll have more shortly from the...
And thank you very much indeed, Oisin, getting all the information out there before the line just went a little bit dodgy, but thank you very much indeed, Oisin. More from the rally to follow shortly, and right through today and Saturday and Sunday as well. If you want to keep up to date with the rally, you could do no better than listen to Highland and check our social media and highlandradio.com as well. If you want to know what's happening out there on the roads, you'll learn it here first. It's the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio. Now, just going to some of your comments before we go back to Fionnuala and to Michael. Donald Sutherland, sad loss. It was something about his eyes. Loved the actor. I have to ask, what's the last film you mentioned on air? Your man started to chat and I missed the title. Not sure who your man is. It's one of us. We were talking about Don't Look Now. No, we weren't. We were. It was Don't Look Now we were speaking.
We were talking about it, yeah.
Yeah, we were. Yeah, we were talking about that one. But we've also spoken about Kelly's Heroes and about Clute and about numerous others as well. I think it's Don't Look Now. Now, caller said, Donal and Company giving it welly on What's on the Telly. I like that. That could be you.
Yes.
That's entertainment. Yeah. Giving it welly.
What's on the telly.
It's sad news when I heard the sad passing of Donald Sutherland. He led a full life from MASH to Kelly's Heroes and the present day in The Hunger Games. And like Peter O'Toole, sadly never nominated. Mm. He did film The Railway Man with Julie Christie in Glencullum Kill.
Oh.
And I remember that happening in the 1990s, actually. I should have remembered that. But the Railway Man was filmed in south-southwest Donegal. That was done in the 90s. It would have been one of the first films that was made in Donegal.
Wow.
During my time here, right, when Highland was on. It's almost come de rigueur now that there are films made in Donegal. Mm. But another caller says, reminds me of another long-running character, Doctor Who reaches its epic finale, a two-parter tomorrow night.
Yeah.
But have fellow Whovians Michael and Donald been blown away or cast adrift, as ratings on this one have been hit and miss?
Yes.
The jury is still out on Kuchigatwa, as far as I'm concerned.
Really?
I like him. Now, I think my issue, slight issue with it is, I think he is a great actor. I love the interplay between himself and Millie Gibson.
Yes.
I mean, and it's interesting to watch the whole sort of the Ruby Sunday. I keep wanting to call it Ruby Tuesday. Yes. I stopped myself. But the Ruby Sunday, we're coming and we're obviously going to come to some sort of a conclusion tomorrow.
Yeah.
And I thought, the last episode when they brought UNIT back in and they started bringing in some of the old, and I think maybe my issue with this is that we haven't had too much contact with the overarching Doctor Who mythology yet.
Yeah,
we haven't. There's barely any reference to Gallifrey. There's barely any, we haven't had Daleks. We haven't had Cybermen. And we're not going, it's almost as though this is a new Doctor Who and this is a new road we're going down. And they're all new Doctors, but there hasn't been enough yet, to my mind, to actually hook it back in with the overall Doctor Who mythology.
That makes a lot of sense, yeah.
And but I do like the characters, and I think the interplay is very interesting, and I'm looking forward to where it's going. I would still hold that, certainly of the modern era, to my mind, Matt Smith was the best Doctor of the modern era, and Tom Baker still remains the Uber Doctor of all time.
Yeah,
I mean, I think that isn't an opinion, that's a fact.
That's fact. You can have an altered opinion, but you're just wrong.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I want to stay with yourself for the moment, Fionnuala, because you've given me such a list, and a lot of stuff that people won't necessarily know. Something people will know is dodgeball. And it's 20 years old.
Yeah. My God, that's... wow.
Well, yeah, I'll go back to the Crumbly in a minute. But yeah, Dodgeball is 20 years old, which I couldn't believe myself. Because, again, it just popped up on Disney and it was celebrating the 20 years. And I have to say, it was, for a time, one of my favourite comedy movies ever. Because it's just so daft. And it was nearly one of the first one of those movies that were just where... all these like loads of characters come together and you're like, they're all, one of them is crazier than the other.
And Vince Vaughn was amazing. Old school and Anchorman and all that. Yeah, they're all around that same.
It's all around that same sort of time. There was sort of like a load of them that kind of came out around that time. Dodgeball was one of the first ones I remember seeing it in the cinema and just absolutely loving it. You know, Vince Vaughn is in it. Ben Stiller's in it. Ben Stiller's good lady wife is in it. There's, and just as really fun. If you're sitting around at the weekend and you're, not into the rally, this is the thing to do. Sit down and enjoy yourself and watch Dodgeball and celebrate the 20th anniversary.
It's funny. I mean, you know, you actually start to care about a group of dysfunctional people who run around throwing balls at other people. And you actually care about it.
I know. You really want their gym to survive.
Okay. to slightly less trivial matters, we'll go back to the Crumbly trials because it is, as you said, it is an important...
Well, I think it's an interesting one for people to think about. Like I said, the thing about the book that I read, We Need to Talk About Kevin, was all basically about the child that kind of went wrong, and was it nature, was it nurture? And that's kind of always a question that people have. You know, we hear these terrible stories of people doing terrible things, and you wonder, sometimes you think, where are the parents? Is it the parent? Is it not? Mm. And it starts a debate. This is a very interesting case that took place in America. Sadly, a 15-year-old Ethan Crumbly committed a school shooting, all too common in the States now, I'm afraid. And he killed four of his classmates, all equally the same age. I think the youngest was 14, the eldest was 16. A terrible tragedy. What was different about this is, alongside Ethan being arrested and charged... And unbelievable thing, 15 years of age, and he's received a life sentence. But alongside that, his parents were also charged, which is the first time the parents have been charged in such a case. And they were both charged with involuntary manslaughter. And basically, the case was made as to whether or not they had in some way been neglectful or were aware that this was a path that was, that their son was going down, and was there something that they could have done to prevent it? I mean, it's a true story. It's a documentary. In this documentary, they talk to, again, and as I said, the case only finished in April. They take excerpts from the trial because it is America, so everything is televised. So there's excerpts from the trial in it. They speak to the prosecution and the defense lawyers on both sides. There is talk with some of the other people that are involved in it, between the school and the families, you know, and other students that were there around the time, because they would have testified during the trial. So it's just a really interesting one. And obviously, I don't know whether I should be saying it, but the answer is obviously people can Google it if they want to and see. But it's only an hour long, it's about an hour and 10 minutes or so. But it's very interesting to see, because is this the way that it's going to go?
Is this the case where the parents actually gave the student the gun as a present, or is that a different one?
No, this is it. Well, there's a question about whether, and that's the part of the thing that it was kind of advertised. It was kind of reported a lot of things that they gave him the weapon. They seem to be saying that they just happened to buy themselves a weapon.
Yeah.
And that was in their house. There's a lot of stuff that went on here. The school had called them in only hours earlier to say that there was a problem with the young man, that, you know, he was clearly going off the edge. He, in his diaries, had written that nobody was listening to him and that he needed help and that he was he went down a spiral of depression and anxiety and all that, as we were talking about earlier on, that sadly teenagers do. And for this young man, he didn't seem to feel that there was anybody listening to him or anybody that was helping him. And then sadly, this is where it ended up, in that, you know, he took the life of his schoolmates. So the documentary, and as I said, I haven't quite gotten to the end of it, but the documentary is a really interesting thing. Cause like I said, it's back into that kind of nature nurture. How much can we be aware of the inside of our children's heads? And should we be responsible for for, you know, for this kind of thing. And I know it's probably something that people have asked themselves at different times when you hear about these tragedies or you're watching them on the news and you kind of go, what's going on there? That seems crack. So it's an interesting one for people to just, you know, watch. You'll definitely end up talking to your friends about it.
Absolutely. Right, before we go for a break, I have a very important clarification to make. I have made a grave mistake on the programme for which I have to sincerely apologise. The Railway Station Man was filmed in Balsany and Cashnagore in the early 1990s, and not in Glencolumbkill. To the people of Balsany, Cashnagore and surrounding areas, sorry. We're coming into the final few minutes of That's Entertainment with Michael and Fionnuala. Michael, I want to go back to yourself, and the other thing you've put forward that you want to talk about this morning is in the cinema. And that's it.
Yeah, myself and Fionnuala, we saw this a few weeks back. John Krasinski is obviously the theme in my reviews today because he plays Jack Ryan, and then he has become a director with great success with his Quiet Place movies, the third of which is coming to the cinema this coming week.
Yeah.
Can't wait to see that, although I'll be going to see that one alone. Isn't that right, Fionnuala? 110% on my own for that one.
They're great films, though.
They are fantastic films. Yeah, the first two are amazing. Fantastic, fantastic. So this is his other project. It's aimed at kids. IF stands for Imaginary Friend. And John Krasinski is in this movie in a support role, playing the father of the main character, a young girl, teenage girl, who is kind of left to her own devices a little bit. Her mother has passed away some years earlier. Her father is in hospital and he's undergoing surgery. So she's kind of left her own advices a little bit. She's staying with
Michael,
her grandparent.
Yeah. I am an equal opportunity interrupter.
Yes.
I interrupted Fionnuala for the rally. And it's only right that I should afford you. I should afford you the same respect. So I'm going to interrupt you now. We're going to go over on Zoom to County House in Lifford, where Michaela Clark is standing by. Michaela's been attending the annual meeting of Donegal County Council. Michaela, do we have white smoke?
Yes, we do. So it's been confirmed that independent councillor Niamh Kennedy is the new Cathaoirleach of Donegal County Council. She replaces outgoing councillor Martin Harley, and her election as Cathaoirleach was proposed by fellow independent Pádraig McGarvey, and that was seconded by Martin Farron of the Labour Party. It was then proposed by councillor Frank McBrearty that Thomas Sean Devine of the 100% Redress Party would take the chair instead. That was seconded by Councillor Micheál Colmogill-Asquith, so it did go to a vote then. And Councillor Niamh Kennedy received 27 votes, while Councillor Thomas Sean Devine received 9. There was a progressive independent group, and that comprised of Councillors Mike McBride, Micheál Colmogill-Asquith, Declan Meehan, Jimmy Brogan and Frank McBrearty. They all voted against Councillor Kennedy as the Cathaoirleach, as did the 100% Redress Party. And just a couple of minutes ago before I joined you, Jimmy Kavanagh has been elected as the last Cathaoirleach. So he was proposed by Councillor Martin Harley and seconded by Councillor Manus Bowen. And also in that proposal, Councillor Frank McBrearty, he proposed Joy Beard of the 100% Redress Party would be the last Cathaoirleach, but there was no one seconded that. So Councillor Jimmy Kavanagh has been confirmed.
In terms of the rest of the meeting, a lot of committee places to be decided, details regarding Cathaoirleach of the municipal districts over the course of the coming years. There was some talk of the meeting adjourning, Michaela. Has that happened, or are they going to complete out the business?
No, so I think it's going to continue. We were discussing earlier about Councillor Jerry McMonagall, his daughter's getting married, so he did join on Zoom. So they let him go after he paid his tributes to Councillor Martin Harley as the outgoing Cathaoirleach. So there's been no talk. It does look as if it will go ahead the rest of the day.
Michaela, thank you very much indeed. I will be hearing, I'm sure, on the news from Councillor Niamh Kennedy. You've been speaking to her since her election. That'll be on the news at 1. But for now, Michaela Clark, thank you very much indeed. So confirmation that Councillor Niamh Kennedy is the new Cathaoirleach of Donegal County Council. Michael, I interrupted you there, and I'm now going to give you approximately 47 seconds to finish your point.
It can be done.
Go.
It can be done. So the protagonist is the girl, and she ends up working with the downstairs neighbour, played by Ryan Reynolds. And his mission is to take all these imaginary friends that have been forgotten by the children that they were bonded with and to find them new homes. It's a very strong idea, but I didn't think, and the critics didn't think, and Fionnuala didn't think, it was a particularly strong execution. It lacked focus, wasn't particularly funny or charming. I didn't really enjoy it very much, and it has been an underperformer. I've seen that, like, in terms of the response around the world. So it's a good, possibly great idea, but it just doesn't quite gel. And it has an amazing voice cast. I mean, it really has, but it just doesn't seem to come together.
Okay, one final comment before we go. Caller says, I started watching Presumed Innocent on Apple TV, starring Jake Gyllenhaal and Ireland's Ruth Negga. Harrison Ford was in the original movie, and it's, the caller says, pretty good. Oh. And I am going to give the last word to myself, The Boys and House of the Dragon. They are the two programs that I'm going to be watching over the course of the next week or two. The Boys in particular, I absolutely love it. If you haven't watched The Boys, absolutely recommend it. It's on Amazon and it's only great. Time has, I fear, beaten us. It's 2 minutes to 12 midday. I want to say a very special thank you indeed to our entertainment panel, the always dependable and wonderful Fionnuala Rabbit and Michael Leddy, both of you legends at this point in time of Friday broadcasting on Highland Radio.
And beyond.
Thank you both indeed. Thanks to all who contributed to the show today. Thanks to Shannon and to Caroline. Caroline producing as always and holding my hand. Thanks to all our contributors. Thanks to Oisin and to Michaela for their contributions. Most importantly, thank you to you for listening. I'm Donal Kavanagh. Have a great day.